Okay, we're going to take your phone calls, questions with Barbara Hand Clow. Also, what do you think is going to happen around 2012? Check in with us back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Barbara, do you make predictions?
That's a hard question. What I do is I describe the quality of energy fields that are occurring next. And sometimes I will say it's likely that a certain part of the field, like financial or military or whatever, is going to be affected. But the problem with making predictions is that reality doesn't work that way exactly. We look at everything right now from the point of view of what we know right now. And throwing it forward in time is pretty tricky, as you probably know from talking to a lot of other people. And so, like in the Mayan code, I made some pretty specific predictions for 2006 and 2007 for the first 2 years since the book was sent in. But then as I got further out in time, I wasn't able to be so explicit. For instance, the Mayan code did predict the financial crash, but so did it exactly, right to the date and everything. But so did a lot of other astrologers.
True.
I wasn't
true.
Unique at all.
Yeah, I know Dr. Turi, who comes on the program, he's been pretty good about that.
Yeah, it's really tricky because reality, the future keeps on transmuting based on what we're doing in the current now. And it's especially complex right now because we're changing so fast at this time. So for me, the way I look at astrology is it's weather forecasting. You know, if a hurricane is going to hit you in 4 days, it's really good to know it's coming. And so when very, very difficult astrological configurations are going to be coming in the near future, I think it's good if people know about that. Like the eclipse is during June. And the next couple of eclipses coming up during June and July are really, really going to be tough. Both of the eclipses and also the summer solstice have what's known as a grand square configuration, which means that you've got four or five or six or seven planets squaring each other and in opposition. And this is very unusual. Last time we had a bunch of eclipses like this was back in the early 90s, and great change came from that period. And these grand squares that are occurring during June and July seem to be the holder of the new form. And so they seem to be, for instance, Uranus has just gone into Aries, and whenever Uranus rules transformation and change, and so whenever Uranus goes into Aries, everything just starts going faster and faster and faster. And you may have noticed right around last Thursday or Friday, right around 4 or 5 days ago, you may have noticed all of a sudden it's like you became a car that went into first gear, and you're just going, going, going. And so then that go, go, go energy is going into these eclipse forms, which are like annealing processes, helping our species move to another level. They're very, very powerful for the next 6 weeks.
Sounds a little like string theory, doesn't it?
I think the nine dimensions does.
Yeah.
Because actually in alchemy, there actually are 11 dimensions, just like string theory. But the only nine that we supposedly can access as humans is the first nine. So I don't do much with the 10th and 11th dimension, although I explain them a little bit. But supposedly we can get in touch with the first nine. And by the way, I channeled the Pleiadian agenda during the exact same period of time as Witten brought in superstring theory, which I've always found very, very interesting.
Now, and when you say you channeled them,
mm-hmm.
how do you know you reached them?
Well, see, I don't normally channel, and I don't really like to do it.
Right.
But what I did was I set up sessions where I went into an altered state, and a group of people questioned me. And these sessions were about 3 hours long, and there were 18 of them. And the reason that I set those sessions up is because I was just hit with this hologram of information in late 1994 that I knew I had to deliver because it was bugging me. And yet I knew that I didn't have the scientific consciousness to explain what I was sensing. And so we had people in the group who were able to ask complex scientific questions, and that's how we pulled some of this information out. So I basically brought in a hologram. And I can't, how do you verify something like that, George,
Yeah.
I mean, now, the fact that the science in the Pleiadian agenda in 1995, most of the science in the dimensions contradicted current theory. Almost every dimension had a new theory in it. And then from 95 to 2004, I sat back and watched science discovering things that verified what the Pleiadians were saying. So you could say that's a form of proof, but I've got a better one. Back when I channeled the Pleiadian agenda, I was the acquisitions editor for Bear & Company Publishing in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And I was receiving about 7,500 to 10,000 manuscripts or solicitations a year, a very high volume. And during the time that I was channeling the Pleiadian agenda, I got four solicitations for the same body of information. One of them was a complete, a finished manuscript. The other two were outlines, and the fourth one was a phone conversation. And when I say the same body of information, I'm not talking about love and light. I'm talking about a system that had nine dimensions, that was involved with the Mayan calendar, that was in contact with the Sirius, Pleiadian, Andromedan, and Orion star systems, very specific information. So I know for sure that at least four other people got this download at the same time. And I have every reason to believe there are many, many more of them. And then when the book came out, it was an instant bestseller because somehow this crazy book resonated with people.
Well, that's the time period. It works. Let's go to some phone calls. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Jamestown, Ohio, we go. First time caller. Nancy, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hello, Nancy. Good morning.
Hi, how are you guys?
All is well.
Hi, Nancy.
Well, it's great to be able to talk to both of you, and I love the show. I have two of your books, Barbara.
Mm-hmm.
My first question was, how would a medicine wheel help us through June or up through March of 2011?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question.
And then how are the whales and dolphins affected or affecting the Earth through these, you know, through what you're talking about, this
that
transition?
Was the oil wells? Was that the second question?
No, the whales and dolphins in the oceans.
Okay, I said whales and dolphins. Okay, you've got a little bit of a great accent. Okay.
Right.
Okay. Well, first of all, are you talking about making your own medicine wheel for meditation, or are you talking about working with big medicine wheels?
A medicine wheel here.
Okay.
At my house.
Okay,
right.
So you've created a medicine wheel, which, of course, orients you to the seven directions and gives you the ability to sit in the center of it and access consciousness from the four directions in terms of north, south, east, and west, and above and below. And according to the Pleiadians, this is the essence of dealing with third dimension. In other words, being oriented by medicine wheels or altars is the best way to work with the third dimension, our dimension. And so assuming that things are going to be as intense as it looks like they're going to be, then working at that level is extremely helpful for you and for the planet itself. And I strongly advise that you and many other people consider doing this kind of work. I really believe in it.
Yeah, I wanted to ask that question because I thought it would be important for the audience to know about that.
And in Chapter 3, I get into some of those techniques.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a very important way to organize our lives as far as I'm concerned. And then what do you want to know about the whales and dolphins?
I just thought maybe, I didn't know if you, had picked anything up about how they're going through this or if they are being affected by the oil spill or...
They're suffering terribly.
I mean, because they're such a, higher level of intelligence.
That's right. And according to the Pleiadians, the dolphins and whales are six-dimensional. In other words, we are third-dimensional creatures, you and me.
Right.
And according to the Pleiadians, they're existing in a very, very high-dimensional form. And according to the Pleiadians, the sixth dimension, of course, is the realm of geometry and ideal forms that affect our reality. And so the dolphins and the whales are swimming the currents of the oceans, constantly building geometrical forms that keep our ocean in a state of health and safety. And so this what they're doing is helping the planet with some of these problems. But boy, are we overwhelming the oceans. I mean, it's not just the oil spill, it's also the, the stuff that's going on, setting off detonations of explosives below the surface out here in the west coast of the United States and Canada. We're really challenging the ability of these creatures to survive.
Tell me a little bit about how you tie in Thomas Gold and his abiotic oil theory with this. Mm-hmm. It's fascinating.
Yeah, the second dimension, as we know, is the telluric realm below the surface. And so when the Pleiadians brought that information in, they said that the second dimension creates the third dimension. In other words, that the telluric metallic realm is creating us in this dimension. Well, back in 95, that completely contradicted current science, where all of the models for creation on the third dimension have to do with comets and panspermia theory and primordial soup, all of those different models that we've been playing around with. So I was having a real struggle describing the second dimension because what they said about it differed so radically from current science. And then I ran into the research of Thomas Gold. Thomas Gold was Fred Hoyle's colleague, and both of them were very famous scientists of the last century. And Thomas Gold is the person who adopted the abiotic oil theory. Now, if you go back 100 years, maybe back to 1850, 1900, a lot of scientists thought that the what I call the rotting dinosaur theory is where oil came from. In other words, the basic theory was that all these plants and animals had rotted in these pools and then became pools of oil. We all know that one. Well, the other theory was that oil is a renewable resource, which is being created in the second dimension by a series of chemical reactions. And then there's a certain point below the surface of the earth where the oil goes from inorganic to organic. And at that point, we have oil. And so I am so happy that I described that theory in The Alchemy of Nine Dimensions back in 1995, because as a matter of fact, what's going on scientifically at this point is that is very quickly becoming the current theory of the creation of oil.
Yeah, it's getting stronger and stronger.
It's getting stronger, yeah. In fact, when I heard some of the scientists talking about the oil spill, a couple of them slipped out and almost said it. I was really on the edge of my chair. But the point would be that the global elite does not want the public to know that oil is a renewable resource, because as long as the public doesn't know that, then number one, they'll continue to pay ridiculously high prices for it.
That's right.
And then number two, we have to look at the oil spill in the Gulf from the point of view of the abiotic oil spill. And the reason that I think this is such a great tragedy is I don't think this is about piercing a little pool of oil that collected from rotting dinosaurs and plants. I think they have pierced the oil layer of the planet, and it's gushing into the ocean.
I think so, too. There's no doubt about that. They've gone way too deep on this one.
So serious. And another thing that's really frustrating about it, George, is the Russian, when the abiotic oil theory became developed enough so it could be used technologically, the Russians drilled about 300 to 500 deep wells in Russia to reach the source. And then, meanwhile, the Americans were just in other countries were just picking up oil wherever they could as quickly as possible. And so the reason for the offshore drilling is as far as this is just a supposition on my part, is it's easier to put the pipe all the way through the ocean and down to the ocean floor where the pressure is high enough than it is to drill through the crust of the earth.
Okay, indeed. Let's go to Fayetteville, Tennessee, east of the Rockies. We've got Jeff there. Hey, Jeff, go ahead.
Great show, guys. A big fan, George.
Thank you.
I really have a question now from that last comment for Barbara. Barbara, whenever the calendar ends in October of next year, and you say, well, pretty much we'll all tune in or whatever you said, will the government still have as much control over us at that point in time?
I think that the government control and the corporate control is we're in the middle of that breakdown. And I think, first of all, it's impossible for us to imagine our future right now. That's one of the most difficult things that we're living with, is we're living through a rapid level of transformation without having any idea what the end point's going to be. Not so much in terms of timing, but in terms of the qualities that we're going to exist with. And I do think that this power and control over the, over our species is breaking down now, and I think it's going to continue to break down.
Mm-hmm. I had another comment, too. I really do feel like I feel like something's going on as well, because, like, tonight, whenever you said the October 28th, that's my birthday, and it, you know, kind of rained. I really noticed things going on, and like I told your screener when I called in, I've had many, many, many dreams, like 20 or 30 in the last year or so, of like something with the earth in my dream. It's almost like an end of the world type scenario. It's really, really scary.
Yeah. Well, how about this? The thesis of Catastrophobia, which is my 2001 book, is that these cataclysms happened, the recent cataclysms, 11 or 12,000 years ago. But science has not given us the correct model. Science is really only adopting the idea of ancient cataclysms only in the last 20 or 30 years. Before that, everybody had the model that everything was slowly changing. And so I really think that what may be going on with you is you may have memories of the cataclysm of the past, and then now that we're in the middle of this vibrational field now, you're dreaming in order to process those memories, which actually is a very positive thing. But it's just so wise to not take that next step and to actually believe or think that you know that's what's going to happen. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
And it could happen. I'm not going to sit here and say it's not going to happen. After all, look at the cataclysms that are going on right now. But I think if you get into the idea that these are inner memories of the past, it could be very powerful for you.
Wow. Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure. Thanks for calling.
You got that right. Barbara, as you were developing this entire concept through the Mayan code and alchemy of nine dimensions, did you come across anything that you found to be frighteningly baffling? Anything
yeah.
out there?
Yeah. The biggest issue for me as I was writing this book was, okay, what is going to happen in 2011? You know, after all, that's what we're 2011, 2012. And I came to the conclusion that something involved in this had to involve moving our consciousness back out into the cosmos. Now, I have adopted a theory that's called exopolitics. This is from Alfred Weber. And exopolitics posits that when the cataclysms occurred 12,000 years ago and we became a multi-traumatized species, at that point we became very violent and aggressive. And if you go back 10 or 11,000 years, this is where we see this peculiar human aggression occurring. So I've adopted the idea that there's going to be a point where we are going to move back into the universe. In other words, we've been, in a sense, the right word would be, we've been quarantined from the rest of the universe because we're so blasted.
Or locked up.
quarantined and locked up, exactly. So the big puzzle to me always is, how is that going to work out? Because first of all, I'm very suspicious of the global elite. And the minute there's any kind of announcement of any big extraterrestrial landing or something like that, I'd be suspicious of whether they created a holographic event.
Well, that's possible, Project Bluebeam. Let's talk about that a little bit, Barbara. I want to get your take on that, and we'll take more calls on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, lots of requests for that poem I read in the first hour, A Soldier Died Today. Lex will post it after the program under the show recap for you. And also, if you get the free Coast Zone e-newsletter, which you can just subscribe to by going to the coasttocoastam.com website, it's free. It's delivered right to your computer doorstep every morning. It will be in that as well. And a lot of you have dads and some moms who are soldiers, and some of them aren't with us today. And it touched you, as it has me over the years, so it's available there for you. We'll be back in a moment with more phone calls with Barbara Hand Clow, author of Alchemy of Nine Dimensions, on Coast to Coast AM. Barbara, there's talk of a project called Project Bluebeam, where they believe governments will conduct this holographic image of UFOs and try to scare the living daylights out
right.
of us.
Right.
You mentioned something like that as a distinct possibility.
Yeah.
Would they do that to us?
Well, you know, all the major religions are based on fear and guilt and original sin, and, you know, there's no access to higher states of consciousness. And so one of the things that's really being busted big time right now is are the major religions, especially the Pope. Like, the oil spill's been great for the Pope. We haven't heard much lately about the scandals, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And so one of the interesting things about Project Bluebeam is that they're going to come up with some kind of an image that's going to manipulate the public in some sort of major way. They're going to have to play off of some of those ancient archetypes that people have suffered with over the generations that we're now breaking down. And so we're really in a kind of an incredible race to an end zone right now. And there must be reasons why they're not doing it already. Like, I remember back in 1999, the Israelis wanted to project, or no, I think it was the fundamentalist Christians, wanted to project an image of Jesus flying over Jerusalem as the second coming. And that was blocked.
Seriously? They wanted to do that?
I remember that, yeah. And that's, I'm not getting that one exactly right, but it was 1999. And for the millennium, they wanted to project an image of Jesus flying over Jerusalem, just as a millennial's celebration. It wasn't going to be secret. But, of course, if they did it, then that would, first of all, show that they can do it if they want to, which is interesting.
Well, there's so many ways
in which this could backfire when you start to think about it. And meanwhile, we're doing our job exposing the secrets and exposing the incredible difficulties that are in the major religions on this planet.
You know, when we talk about the nine dimensions and how it's going to culminate with the Mayan calendar, what's beyond that? A tenth dimension?
This is the really tricky part, and Carl Coleman and I talk about it a lot, because the idea here would be that the driving force of evolution that's creating time culminates in October 28th, 2011. And where I go with that, and Carl doesn't go here, but I also use 2012, George, because I think when we go into 2012, the major seasons, the equinoxes and the solstices, are going to be a very, very big deal for our species to reorient our consciousness on this planet. So I do see some sense of what's going to be happening in 2012. But, boy, it's hard to have a vision of the future right now.
It sure is.
That's why it's so hard for children right now.
It's so hard for everybody right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. I mean, how do you grow up in a world when you don't have a sense of the future? That's really the big challenge.
Let's go to Marietta, California. Francine is there. Hey, Francine. Good morning.
Good evening. Barbara, I think it's great you're speaking your truth.
I do
have a question for you, but I did want to mention, according to the Science Channel's 100 Greatest Discoveries, the Earth's solid iron sphere was confirmed in 1936 by Inge Lehmann because of seismic activity. But I don't think that takes anything away from the fantastic work that you're doing. I do think you're a wonderful person. I do have a question. When you mentioned about this information that you get from the Pleiadians. Mm-hmm. You said that you got it as a kind of a hologram. So when I hear that, I kind of think that as like they gave you a giant kind of a download, mm-hmm. and it is the way that I'm looking at that, and they kind of put it in there, and it was this big amount of information, and then people asked you about it, as opposed to maybe going into a trance state and getting the information back and forth, which I think would make it easier because there wouldn't be a language thing. It would be more kind of archetypes and ideas. Could you tell us a little bit more about that and how it worked? Because that's very interesting to me. And then I'll take my information off the air and bless you, and I wish you much luck. Thanks a lot.
Thanks. When it downloaded, I did see a vision of an icosahedral sphere, which was which was filled with light. But I was sitting in my house, and all of a sudden this icosahedral sphere manifested in front of my forehead, about 4 feet out in front of me, that had lines of light coming into it. And so I sat there for a couple of hours and just stared at it. And I mean, I couldn't move away from it. And while I was staring at it, I felt like I was a computer with a disk being downloaded into my brain. That's as close as I can come to it. And then once the download was finished, it was just like in a computer, it was finished. And then the next thing that happened is the sphere wasn't there anymore. And then I struggled for a couple of months to figure out what to do with this, because what it did to me, when it first downloaded, is I started getting tinnitus from it, a pretty severe ear ringing. And I'd never had that before. It's really a horrific experience. And so when I had channeling sessions to bring in the data, then the tinnitus would go down and I would feel a lot better. So I just kept on doing the sessions until all the information was in, then I stopped. And maybe there's another way to do this, but that's the way I did it.
Okay, let's go to Royal Oak, Michigan, where I spent many a day east of the Rockies. Hi, Donna, go ahead.
Hi, George, and hi, Barbara.
Hi, Donna.
I have a very warm and muggy here and late, but I'm doing great. I have a question in regards to people who have a physical sensing of global events like seismic activity, tsunamis, mine explosions, that sort of thing. How can one increase the ability to focus, to pinpoint the spot or epicenter, so to speak, so that one can use it for the betterment of humanity and, like, possible, notification or advance warning type uses, that type of thing?
Well, I have exactly the same problem. I pick up on all kinds of stuff, and I have a lot of trouble frequently figuring out what it is. And I usually will find out after an event happened what was actually affecting me. So I've only found myself able to use it usefully in very minimal cases. I think it's pretty difficult to take that ability into actually being able to use it.
Is there an interconnection with the different dimensions when one is physically sensing what's taking place?
All I know is that I can feel this. It really is very tough on. I find it tough physically and tough emotionally. Personally, I wish I didn't do it. But I just am wired that way, and that's what happens. Now, it has affected my work a lot because then I've gone on and I've created in a very creative way. And probably the way I'm picking up data in general probably has enabled me to be a good writer. But it's really tough, tough thing to live with that one.
Because I find that, emotions will come, and I've learned to ask, okay, are these mine? Or is this something else that I'm sensing?
Right.
And, things such as earth changes, like seismic activity.
Yeah.
I mean, it can be halfway around the world. And
actually, a lot of people do this, as far as I can see. And I think it even may be increasing at this time, assuming that also seismic activity is increasing. Like, basically, from January until recently, I was nauseated a lot of the time because of all the earthquakes.
I'm getting lots of people who want us to use consciousness to plug this leak in the Gulf of Mexico. Would that have ramifications, consequences?
I think on that... I think it's more an issue of whether people can work with transmutation, because there's going to be an incredible need for energy to purify the waters and energy to clean. You know what I mean? I don't know about how anybody's going to be able to plug this thing. I unfortunately think it's probably just going to run out.
But that could be a long time, Barb.
I know. But they did it. They plugged it. And the pressure should be on them.
Scottsdale, Arizona, we go west of the Rockies. Ben, you're up with Barbara Clow.
Good evening, Ms. Clow.
Hi.
I had a question. I actually had a couple questions. For one, what are the Native American and other shamans, or whatever you want to call them, doing regarding this 2011-2012 period?
Oh.
I mean, I would imagine that being at the Maya were a Native American people as well, that the other shamans of the other peoples would be deeply involved in this.
Oh.
My other question being, are your books available?
Let me answer one and then go to the other one, because it's easier. It's late at night, too. shamanically, There are native people who have been doing ceremonial work in relationship to the Mayan calendars, especially down in Mexico and in Guatemala, but all over the planet. We've been doing almost continual ceremony for many, many years now regarding the calendar. It started to get very, very big back in 1987. You heard about harmonic convergence probably. When I was at Teotihuacan in northern Mexico City, and there were 100,000 people at that point, and these ceremonies have been getting bigger and bigger and bigger. They're more networked and more interrelated, and the indigenous people are really working with the birthing of the planet, and that's really about all I can say.
Wow. I was 6 when that came out, but when the harmonic convergence came, but I have heard of it.
Yeah.
What's your second question?
Yeah.
My other question is, do you have a workshop in Phoenix, and are your books in alternative formats, such as audio or other formats?
Yeah, I've got a lot of music that's been created for the dimensions and audio teachings and all that. And the easiest way to get that is to either go to my website, and George gave that. It's handclow2012.com.
And we've got that linked up for you, Barbara.
Go directly to wiseawakening.com. They're really the bigger distributor of all of my stuff.
We talked a little bit about hands-on healing and using the ability of whatever is out there to tap into. Is that growing?
Yes, definitely. In fact, it's getting to the point where every other person is a healer. And this is what I was hoping was going to happen, because with the intensification that's going on now, everybody is working on everybody else, which is exactly what we should be doing.
Dee is a first-time caller in Eugene, Oregon. Hey, Dee, good morning.
Good morning, George, and good morning, Barbara.
Good morning.
I'm so happy to be able to speak with you. I'm a musician and a healer. And I'm well aware of the power of sound and intention to heal. And I really am just so grateful that you're putting this information out there for people and just raising the consciousness. But what my question, or what I would like, if you could, is could you clarify, like beyond the seventh dimension, what you said was divine consciousness or God?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there are a few people besides myself who may not quite be able to grasp that.
Yeah, sure.
You know, in that we've been taught, or most religions teach, and I'm not a religious person, but I know there are people who are. They teach that God is the ultimate, and once you reach that level, then there's nothing else.
Yeah, I know.
And
first of all, that's why it was startling to me to have time be in the ninth dimension, needless to say.
Yeah.
But I think the more relevant comment about God and religion in relationship to this teaching is that religions and God primarily function in our reality at the fourth dimensional level, at the polarized dark and light level, in the collective mind. And what the Pleiadians are saying is that true God consciousness or true divine consciousness is in a much, much higher dimension, which happens to be the eighth dimension. And they're saying that that level of consciousness has nothing to do with judgment and dark and light and archetypal religious forms at all. So one of the things that's kind of confusing for us on the planet is that people pick up the religious issue at the fourth dimensional level, at this collective dark and light archetypal level, instead of at the pure level of the eighth dimension. This is a very, very pure and high frequency that is beyond any world religion or any, you know, sort of dominant teaching like that.
Yeah, I understand that part. What I don't, or what is hard to put into place for me in my state of consciousness, is that there's something beyond that.
I agree.
I.e. the time code.
I agree.
And so,
clarify that? Well, the only thing that helped me to understand it was to understand Kalaman's theory. And so in order to answer that question for yourself, you'd have to get into reading the Mayan code, or maybe you have. Have you read the Mayan code?
Actually, I bought it, and I couldn't understand it.
You couldn't understand it. Yeah, this is complicated material. But the idea there is the actual creative agenda of the universe in the ninth dimension, the evolutionary agenda, then works into the consciousness of the divine mind. Now, there's no hierarchy in this system, by the way. The second dimension isn't better than the fourth dimension, or the ninth dimension isn't better than the seventh dimension, or anything like that. Each one of these dimensions has a basic integrity to it.
Okay, there you go. A couple more minutes to go, and we'll take more calls with Barbara next hour. What about Hopi prophecy, Barbara? Do you get involved in that at all?
Mm-hmm. I've done work, a lot of work with the Hopi back in the 1970s and 1980s when I was in New Mexico, 1990s. And I follow the Hopi prophecy, and I think, as you probably know, it's a little bit more apocalyptical and negative than the way I think.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Quite a bit more.
Yeah, yeah. I follow what they have to say. These are important teachers. So I've spent a lot of time up there. They're amazing people.
I mean, I find it refreshing that you see a light at the end of the tunnel for us, even though you qualify it by saying that it's going to be a bumpy road there.
Mm-hmm.
Just how bumpy.
Yep.
And then it tosses us off, and we're all in a mess. Huh?
Yeah, and it's going to be very intense through the rest of 2010. And it helps me. It's been helping me to know that. Like, for example, I'm normally out teaching about 10 or 15 times a year, and because of the intensity of things this year, I'm only teaching a few times. And that enabled me to be there for my family, because we have a big family.
Now, what do you mean the intensity, and you're not doing it enough? Why?
Well, because the negative forces are, I mean, I don't know whether your heart is breaking over what's happening with the oil spill.
Oh, yeah, I'm upset about that.
Yeah,
it's frustrating.
It's just heartbreaking. And then, of course, as we know just from the volcano and the different disruptions on the planet, it is harder to travel around right now. And so knowing that in advance enabled me to kind of cool it a little bit and get ready for the energy next year and not get stuck in this, if you know what I mean.
Well, I guess it can be draining.
Well, I'm a mom, and I've got a lot of kids. In other words, family comes first, always, for me.
Good for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And so there are times, you know, after all, everybody can take a year off once in a while. But it's amazing how much our family has needed us.
All right. Well, those of you on hand in Olympia, Washington, and Chicago, and Windsor, Ontario, and Canada, right across the river from Detroit, hang on. We'll be back with more of your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. If you need to email me, george@coast2to.com. Also, if you just want to do georgenori.com, that'll take you straight to the website, too. We've got that linked up as well. I'll be right back with Barbara Hand Clough and your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM.